What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Or if you listen to the pre-roll ad, you almost let me get away with saying that I was the host in this episode.
Did you sneak that through?
I did. You didn't correct it, so I'm just saying, who's to say who's the real host this week?
I think everybody knows.
I think, yeah.
I'm not. I'm not tremendously concerned, if I'm being entirely honest with you. Okay, Jay.
Fair enough.
All right, Jay. So we don't normally start with the Wick of the Peak.
Oh.
But because I'd like to.
Okay.
We're going to start with the Wick of the Peak. This week, I see that you have written down for the letter J, plant sprayer.
Oh, yes. So as you know, I've been recently getting into some plants.
Yeah. I think all of us really have been.
Yeah.
This is a question in general. Is this going around right now, or is this just like one of those like echo chamber things where it's like, I got really into plants and now I sort of like see it everywhere? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe a combination of three things are happening.
Okay.
One is that we are, first of all, I think just late to the plant party, which was a big thing during COVID, like people started getting really into their plants because they couldn't leave the house. And I was like, this is something I can do at my house and I'm here all the time to take care of them. So plants.
Yeah, finally.
Two, it's also spring, which I think annually is just like, let's get into plants time.
True.
So there's that. And then three, I think also it's a bit of an echo chamber where the more you get into plants, the more plants find you.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. It's just the nature of plants, isn't it? They find you.
The nature of plants. Indeed.
Because they are literal nature.
Because they are literal nature. Exactly. So anyway, at my house, I've got three main living plants inside my house now. And we were on one of our Patreon Google Hangout calls for Super Carlin Brothers a couple months ago, and one of the girls on the call, we always have this running joke about all the different things in her apartment,
right?
And since last she had been on the call, there were several new items in the apartment, and by several I mean like a jungle's worth of plants.
Jungle, forest.
It was a tremendous number of plants in one space. And it was just like this. That is so cool. It looks so good. It looks so cool. And not only that, she was totally nerding out about every single plant. So that was just fun. But it was like, do you water them all every day? And she's like, well, the ones that need watering every day. And I was like, this is news to me that not all plants need water every day. Oh my gosh, you're blowing my mind.
I know. Yeah, We knew nothing.
But she showed us the mechanism she had for watering all the plants that needed the watering on the days they needed watering. And instead of just your traditional watering can, it was this awesome little, like, just water sprayer. You just fill it with water and you pump it up and it pressurizes. And then it has this little, like, hose and you just press a little button. And it is the most satisfying spray nozzle watering thing ever. It's like a little bit stronger than like a good misting, but like really spraying it out there. And like the moment I got it, because I messaged her and was like, what is the exact thing you had? And she sent it to me and I bought it and I put it together. And the moment I pushed the button, I was like, this is one of the most relaxing activities I've ever done. Just holding this button down and watching the water, not even watering plants. I could just sit in my yard and just spray this into the breeze and I think I'd be having a fun time.
It's just like bubbles for adults.
Yeah, basically.
Just like, nothing better than a gentle mist.
This is nice. Like what is the, there's gotta be like an ASMR, what is that? Cause that's like, the way like hearing things makes you experience that like sensation, which that's how it was always described to me. I have found a way to enjoy ASMR videos that are not like invoking some sort of sensation inside me.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like this was like whatever people experience when they experience ASMR the true way is what I'm experiencing with my plant sprayer.
Like 10 out of 10 would recommend
10 out
this,
of 10.
This plant sprayer.
It's going to be in the description. So absolutely check it out. If you have plants and you need to water them, I totally recommend it. It's super relaxing.
You know, the funny thing for me, and this is like one of those, like I'm definitely getting old. I can feel it happening. But the thing, cause you got one here for the office as well.
I was like, we got to bring one to the office now. I got to have this access to this kind of fun all over the place.
It is truly spectacular. And like with so many other things, it's like when you eliminate a barrier on doing a particular task, and in this particular case, like by having made it fun, then it's like that ensures it's going to get done.
Exactly.
It reduces the barrier that previously existed.
Yeah.
And now it's happening. But the other thing that's kind of nice about it is because like the wand on it is probably like 2 feet long or something like that. It means you can stand fully tall and like, you know, go around and spray all of your plants from like from one steady position. No bending of the back required.
No back bending required. All your plants are just nice and watered, and you can enjoy a good sprayer mist.
And I will tell you, so this is the thing. So like, I feel like it's like so bad, but I'm like, as I'm getting older, it's like, I don't want to bend over to do things. And right now, the big thing that has like, I've like zeroed in on as the thing that I have to do this with is feeding the dogs in the morning. Because their bowls are like, they're on like the ground, and Indy's is on like one of those like raised, like sort of like small platforms. So it's about like 6 inches off the ground or something like that. And then like the can that holds the dog food is also on the ground. It's probably like 18 inches tall. So no matter what, you know, you sort of like, you walk up to it, you have to like bend down, lift up the lid, scoop in, you know, go over, put it into the one, scoop in again, go over and put it in Chewy's. And I mean, the endeavor of it all.
The endeavor. Like,
truly exhausting.
Why can't everything exist at wrist height? You know?
Well. Oh. And so that's the thing, is that I swear TikTok heard me. You know, and sure enough, it's like I think I heard a spine pop. I know exactly what to deliver. And so I have not made this purchase because it is $400 and I would need two of them.
Oh,
meaning it would
goodness.
Be $800.
Wow. Just to avoid bending over, it sounds like.
Just to avoid bending over, which I'm going to tell you has a value to me.
Right. It sounds like you haven't not considered whatever you're about to tell us about.
That's true. I haven't not considered it.
Nice.
However, I've also not done it.
Okay.
But I think it's a device called the Houndsy. Houndsy.
Okay.
Kibble dispenser. And it is like, it's honestly, it feels like one of those things that like maybe somebody would have made like for the science fair, you know, as like an invention.
Right.
But basically it's like a tall container that has a big joystick on top that you can like pull back and forth. And then at the bottom is like a drawer that holds your dog's bowl. And then as you like pull the lever, it will like shoot the dog bowl underneath the container, fill it with the perfect amount of kibble, and then shoot it back out, and you have like a perfectly filled container. And then like it can be adjusted to work with like a variety of different bowls and stuff, depending on how much your dog obviously eats. Like Chewy eats a lot less than Indy. And so it's like, they're kind of neat looking. They're pretty big. It's almost like a box with like a big, really cool, like mechanical looking lever that comes out of it and stuff. And I'm like,
it's got a good lever on it.
I know. Yeah. I know. Good action control.
Right.
And I'm like, this has been like my dilemma with it, because for one, it's way too much. Like in terms of me, like the struggle, it's like, I just don't think the struggle is $800 struggle.
Right.
You know, but it's also like, man, I would love to not have to bend down. And then if I did this, it would solve it. I wouldn't have to bend down anymore.
It feels like there's probably a non $800 solution to the problem.
Maybe I can get like capacity. One of those. Remember like those claws?
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's where my brain went. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah. So you just like use like the little extend a claw thing
exactly.
with the handle, scoop it in.
Right.
Pour into the bowls. Absolutely. No, this could work. This could work.
I will say, the weird thing, one of the things that I felt like, oh, am I getting old? Also had to do with like bending over. And it was right when we had Luke. And we had a changing table in his room. But then whenever he was downstairs with us, like, you know, if he peed or something, we'd, you know, go to change his diaper. And we were just doing it like on the coffee table or wherever, you know, he was sitting. It wasn't we had like a little portable thing he normally slept in whenever he was just hanging out with us around the house. And so I would just like, you know, you'd bend down and do it real quick, and it didn't take very long. Like, very not long, like less than 30 seconds, you know, just like boop, 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 done, because they're so little.
Right.
But it occurred to me like after 3 days or something, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like actually hurting my back. I was like, why am I in pain? It was like, oh, because I'm bending down to change his diaper for less than 30 seconds at a time every hour. It was like, I can't believe the amount of pain this is causing and why we needed to get a full-on changing table.
Maybe but, you and I should just get into yoga. Maybe it's officially time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've always been up for yoga. I enjoy it a lot. It's like a good exercise.
Structured stretching.
Structure. I mean, that is the wrong way to think about yoga.
It is. It is.
Like, it is. I mean, I have come out of yoga classes like dripping sweat. You know? No doubt.
Yeah.
It can be very difficult. And some of those holds can really hurt. And it's also, I mean, there is a lot of like, you know, flexibility and stuff involved as well.
Right. No, this was very interesting. So like in the story Name of the Wind, bingo, there is a group of like mercenaries who do this like dance, and like the dance that they're performing is called the K-10.
Yeah.
And they do it like multiple times every day. And the process of going through the entire like ritual, it seems like, you know, takes, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes or something.
Right.
But what's rather unbelievable about it when you compare to what you imagine like peak fitness to look like, this is like the slower, the more glacial the pace you have when doing it, the more impressive
right.
your ability.
Yeah.
Because it's like there's so many different things that are like this, but just holding your position somehow, some way, just steady is so much harder than it seems like it would be.
Absolutely. And I think I've read about the K-10. I think it's inspired by Tai Chi, the martial art, which is also a pretty slow moving looking thing. But then, of course, in practice, they move very fast.
Right. That makes sense.
In actual fighting.
That makes sense. Maybe they're just like practicing all of the motions. And then when it actually comes down to it, it's like, ooh, full speed ahead.
Yeah, right. It's like wax on, wax off. Like you just get the muscle memory in there.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
The best way to learn any version of martial arts can all be sourced back to painting a fence.
Exactly. Painting a fence, washing a car, household chores. Now you're a karate master. You're welcome.
I like to think that that's how it works.
Yeah.
I like to think that's how it works. Okay, Jay. Switching gears entirely. Okay. You doing that reminded me of the Houndsy Kibble dispenser.
Oh, right there.
So it's just like, whoosh.
Boy, there's nothing really better than pulling like just a real big lever that does something.
You know, maybe this is also part of like where the world is going right now, is that like everything got digitized from where everything was analog, and maybe at some point in time we'll just come right back around to analog parts again.
There's like, yeah, I've thought this all the time. It's like we have all these like smart washers and dryers and like dishwashers and fridges and stuff, and it's like it's fantastic that you've added all these electronic elements in there, but what you've really added is so many ways to fail.
Yeah.
It's like, I hate my washer and dryer. They do not do a good job at cleaning my clothes or drying my clothes, and they constantly are having all this problem. And it's like, and these are like brand new, you know, they're brand new. And like we had an old washer and dryer, and they worked great. And they didn't have anything fancy.
Is what you're like, telling me, they just don't make them like they used to?
That is exactly right. It is exactly right.
We are getting old.
We're getting so old.
Similarly for me, I have like one of my doors at my house, just like in case, like, I don't know, you forget the key or whatever. We have like a digital keypad. And this was like one of those things that when I was researching it, I was like, oh, well, sure thing. Like, I want to get like a touch screen or something like that. It'll like look a lot like more modern and cool or whatever the case may be. Well, boy howdy was I wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the glass on it like uses like the heat of like your fingers,
yeah,
in order to like press the buttons or whatever. Like,
no.
That's how it's detecting.
So if you're
it
like cold,
so if you're extremely cold or if it's extremely hot outside, then it basically makes it so that like it has a hard time registering the temperatures, because if it's really cold, then your hands are cold and it like doesn't read. And if it's really hot, then the whole face of the thing is really hot and then it doesn't read. And it's like, well, this is just not what I was hoping for. This is just not what I was hoping for. Anyway, in the name of things that look cool, let me get back to my original transition.
Okay.
Okay. So as ever with 75 Hard, I've been reading more nonfiction. And as ever, that means I have new things to talk about, because I'll have these like brain busting like examples given to me. And I'm like, wow, I've never thought of the world this way before. And now it changes everything.
What?
Time to change my entire life again. How great.
So what big change are you making this week?
This week?
Yeah.
This go round? Well, so this is not really a big change, but I do think it's an interesting perspective on something. And it's called the car paradox. And the way that it works is basically that, like, let's say you see somebody driving like a bright red Ferrari down the street, and you look at that car and you're like, wow, that is absolutely amazing. Like, I would love to have that car because it is absolutely amazing. The car paradox is basically that, like, it's sort of this idea that, like, that could be like the reason that the person driving the car bought the car in the first place, because they saw somebody driving the bright red Ferrari and they're like, well, I want to be able to be inside of the experience that makes other people like in admiration of my thing, you know, around me or whatever. So like, that's what ultimately compels you to go out and buy the Ferrari. And then you're like, I'm cool because I have a Ferrari. But the thing is that you, the first person seeing the Ferrari, were not admiring or probably even remotely considering the driver of the Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you were admiring the car.
Ah.
So your admiration is
misplaced.
It's misplaced. You admire the car because the car is a feat of engineering. It's an incredible thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that you will purchase this car that will make people admire you because you admired the car in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it doesn't work that way because people don't end up admiring the person who's driving the car. They just admire the car.
This is a very interesting thing. And there are often cases where I feel like I will drive like past where I'm like, ooh, look at that car. And then I'll look at the person driving and I'm just like, pass.
like you just are completely indifferent.
Well, just like I think a lot of times that sounded rude. Here's what I mean. And I don't mean this to sound like
Jay swiping left.
I know.
Who needs Tinder when you can drive down the street?
I don't want to like sound condescending or anything. What I mean is that like sometimes you'll see like some sort of sports car, convertible or whatnot, and you'll be like driving up past it and like the top will be down. And like, because a lot of times when you get to retirement, that's when you're able to like purchase said kind of vehicle.
Sure.
And, you know, just go out and enjoy it. And I rarely see someone who I feel like entirely matches the personality of the car driving the car.
Oh, interesting. You interesting. Know? Yeah. It's like who do you imagine to drive these cars?
What's the right look to be driving that car? Because on the other hand, sometimes you'll see people driving and it's just like, this person just looks like the worst. I don't want to know them at all.
It's like, so what ends up happening is that instead of like being like, well, I want to be just like them, you're like, well, I just don't want to be like them.
Right. Like, there's no right way to own a cool car.
This. Oh no. What, as someone who I feel like has loved cars my entire life, this is like, it is something that's like, it's tricky for me because I heard this example and I was like, that is an interesting way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I was immediately like, but not me. Like the cars that I love because I love the cars. Like the cars that I covet are because I think like it is cool. And then, but then like, I think the problem was, is that like that psychology for, even for me, despite the fact that like this has been true about me for a long time, I was like, how far does that hold up in my own psychology? Why do I actually want it?
Right.
You know? And it's like, because like, for example, I have in the past couple of years, I have since sold it as well, but I bought a Jeep Wrangler, which since I was probably like 14 was just the dream.
Right.
It's like, I wanted a Jeep Wrangler because I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And once I bought it, I was like, well, this is an amazing car. Like the last thing in the world I want to do is take it off-roading.
Right.
Like, I don't want to like go put it in harm's way.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was kind of like, uh-oh. Then why do I want it?
Then why do you want
because
it?
Because it's like, do I want the perception that I'd be the type of person
right, you
who
want
would go
people
off-roading?
To think you're the kind of person who goes off-roading in your cool Jeep.
Right.
Right.
But I think it's interesting because this is a level of honest that you have to be with yourself that is like you have got to like really let your mind open up. Like, I do not think it is as easy as it sounds to just be like what, let me reflect. Why do I want to do this?
Right.
Like, let me really be honest with myself.
Oh, it's very difficult.
Why?
You're not wrong.
Yeah. Because so often it's like, there's sort of like this idea of, are you setting out to do certain things because it's like your strategy? Like I think about, like the idea of like the way that you play like a board game, for example, like you're making decisions and moves that are like continuously putting yourself in a position of success driven by an underlying strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, my guess is that like, if you want a really cool looking car, that's not the way you're thinking. Like, you're not like, okay, I got the job. I got the apartment. The next move I need to make in order to like move myself into perception of coolness is to go out and buy like the cool car. You know, it's like, I have a feeling these are just things that you're like, you just find yourself compelled towards.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like it's the other way. I feel like really? People are like, no, I'm very much buying this as like a status booster.
Oh man, this is interesting.
This is almost always my assumption about people who drive cars. Like, it's like whenever you hear that like extremely loud exhaust.
Oh yeah.
You know, and It's like that person just peeled out and in their mind, that was the coolest thing. And everyone is like, that guy's awesome. Right. And the reality is everyone hates it and it wasn't cool at all. And it's like you have impressed no one and annoyed everyone, but like inside the echo chamber that is the driver's seat of that car, you're like, I am amazing.
But right, yeah, like this was just the neatest thing that ever could have happened. And it's true. But I think like what ultimately broke the exhaust sound for me, because I remember my high school car, it wasn't really, really loud or anything, but I did put an exhaust on my car as a senior in high school, and I was very excited about it. But I think what ultimately broke it for me is the fundamental understanding of what the muffler on your car is doing, which is exactly what the name suggests.
Right.
Like, cars in general are driven forth by explosions in a controlled environment. Like, that is what a gasoline-powered engine is. Mm-hmm. And those explosions are loud. And so it's like you could take like a car that has no business sounding loud, remove all of the equipment that the manufacturers have put on it in order to make it not loud, and it will be loud.
Right.
So it's like, you know, a 69 Mustang, it matches the tone, it fits the vibe. It is a car that is fast. But also like a Honda Civic will make loud noise as well.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like the loudness of it really isn't necessarily doing a whole lot of performance, like speaking. Mm-hmm. It's almost more of like decals.
Right.
You know, it's like the they look cool if you think they look cool, but they don't make the car that much faster, which someone inevitably is going to explain to me that there is an entire process that goes through an intake, through a manifold, through the exhaust. And I understand that there is a three-part process that all has to do with air movement through the vehicle, which will ultimately make it faster.
Save your DMs, people.
I promise I understand how cars work, but I also promise that just simply having straight pipes is not taking your Honda Civic from like street legal to track ready. So...
Right.
Anyway,
here's the solution, Ben. Don't focus as much on like the crazy like outward perception of people you're driving past in terms of like getting like those cool votes whatever. You have to focus entirely on just the interior experience of the car.
Right. Well, and this with your car, I think, is like where it just shatters everybody, because your car is like, it does have like the heated seats, the cooled seats, it has like the DVD players built into the headrests and the automatic up down seat buttons, and
oh yeah, we got some bells and whistles in there, the car in the traverse.
Oh, you actually, one of my favorites that you have in your car is the center dash, like where the stereo is. There's a button you can press and the screen will lift up, and there's a cubby behind
there.
Oh
man, that's so fun. Also, like, there's the mirror, like the rear view mirror. You can like flip it and it'll turn on like a camera in the back and just show you a video of what's behind you instead of the mirror.
I forgot about it's that pretty one. Good that one. Is a really pretty cool good one. One. Yep. And it has the overhead camera thing, like where it uses like a multitude of cameras to build like an overhead view of your car.
Yeah, it looks like a drone is looking down at you.
You know what I really like expect someday though is that for roofs of vehicles to just actually have drones built into them, and like
that would be a great example of overbuilding your washing machine though.
That would be
the technology
great,
is already working.
It's true. And there would no doubt be like snatchers out there who like for your drone to lift off and then go
whoosh,
and like scoop it with a net.
Scoop it.
Like a modern day bug catcher.
Right.
That's what I imagine. The Pokemon trainers called bug catchers in their nets.
Right. Yeah. You won't see them coming with their giant nets near your parking spot.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, that would be my ultimate query is if you drive a car, or if you're like a car person and this is like something that you've like injected your personality into, what is like the underlying desire? Like, is it something that is like a tool that you're able to put to good use and is like incredibly functional? Is it something that like makes you comfortable, sort of like in mm-hmm. your specific case? Is it something where you want the external admiration from others, mm-hmm. you know, because it's, I don't know, it's all of those little moments, like, and I think this is probably like with the loud exhaust, is that it turns heads. And I think the perception is that it's turning heads for at least the person in the vehicle, because people are like, whoa, did you see that? And instead, most people are like, man, leave that guy.
Calm it down.
I know.
I will say, like, so yeah, my previous car was a Nissan Juke. And I remember specifically like very much wanting that specific car. I thought it just like looked very cool. And like, that's part of why I wanted it. And it was also like, it had like very high acceleration. It was very like fun to drive. It was extremely like everyone who drove it would come back and be like, it's so zippy. And it's like, yes, yes it is.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun driving that car. I'm not sure it ever like turned heads, but it like, on like, I don't even think I thought it turned heads, but from me driving it, like I personally felt cooler driving it. Like, this is the car I want that I think is cool.
Yeah. And so that's, I mean, that goes back a lot to me, like with the, like the relationship that anybody might have, like with their fashion sense.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I feel like I've definitely learned over the years is that the, like what I'm wearing can literally make me more confident, which can then literally make me more effective.
Right.
And that was something that I think for a very long period of time, I couldn't recognize, mm-hmm. like, and I was so worried that caring about how I did look would ultimately like we discussed this before, like with putting like, you know, product in our hair or something like that. It's like the last thing in the world you want is for anybody to know you were trying. Like, goodness gracious.
But is like, and that's like, I feel like that's such like a, oh, what's the word? I don't know. Like a false way of thinking, like, well, you don't want people to think you're trying. Like, what's wrong with trying?
I know.
Right.
And that's like where it's curious if like what, while growing up, there was something that was currently going around about like the effortless look,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause I always do feel like there's, you and I both had like the long hair, you know, that sort of like,
yeah.
like came over like our eyebrows and stuff in high school. And I feel like some of what people were drawn to about that was, it was like, I'm attempting to be able to look good while also attempting to make it look like I don't care at all, because the very nature of having hair that is this long suggests that I don't care.
Right.
And I'm not having it like tidied.
Right.
You know, like I'm not,
yeah, this is like shaggy by design.
It just falls this way.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you do the head flick. Oh, I mean, I can constant, still feel my neck every time I do it. Goodness gracious. Okay. Anyway, transition.
Okay, Ben.
Okay.
So I brought my own philosophical thought today.
You're kidding me right now.
Are you ready?
This is the best day ever.
The best day ever.
Jay,
okay.
Let me just tell you this. There's never a moment where you could bring me something philosophical and I wouldn't be excited about it. There's no such thing.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about it then. So I was scrolling through the TikToks the other day and this one caught my eye and I was like, this is such a Ben thing. I have to talk to you about it on the pop.
Oh, perfect.
So are you familiar with the concept of Plato's cave?
I'm not, surprisingly.
Okay, so Plato's cave is a thought experiment put forth by Plato, and it suggested, and it was like, the idea was that what if from the moment you were born, you were inside of a cave, and everyone you knew was inside a cave, and your entire society existed inside this cave, and inside the cave, you were entirely provided for, you had places to sleep, you had food, you had like your basic needs completely met, but no one there had ever left the outside world at all. They weren't even aware there was anything outside of the cave.
Yep.
Until one day you discover a trickle of light and you follow it and you find the exit to the cave. And as you exit, at first you can't even see. The sun is so bright. It is so different out there. But then your eyes adjust and you look around and you discover the outside world. And it is unbelievable, of course. It's way better than a cave.
Right.
Because it is not a cave. It is the outside world. And you go and you learn things and you come back and you tell everyone else, like, oh my gosh, you guys, I found a way. There's a different way. There is the world outside. There is light. There are things we can do that are not being inside this cave. And the thought experiment goes that the people inside the cave think you're crazy,
right?
Because they generations of people, the entire society has lived inside the cave forever, and now you're telling them what? There's a whole world, an entire world outside of this place? No, I don't think so. That's good. This is obviously the best way to exist ever. Of course, now we have the perspective of knowing that living in a cave and never going outside would be terrible. They have no idea of that perspective. So they are like completely ignorant of the outside world and are like hot to defend said ignorance. And so the point of the experiment is that people are typically very determined to defend their ignorance rather than accepting some new idea.
All of this tracks, right? And I think you actually did a fantastic job explaining all of that.
Okay, thank you so
very
much.
Very well articulated.
Okay, so that's like the premise. That's like the TikTok. They explain the whole thing,
okay,
right there.
Yep.
But then they're like, so the next time you're having a discussion with someone and you feel like maybe they're like getting stuck in their own ignorance and defending something from like an interesting point of view, explain to them Plato's cave. And I was like, at first I was like, that's a very interesting like tactic to try and get to see someone another point of view. But then here's my question, Ben. How do you know, even if you're the one telling the other person about Plato's cave,
that you're not the one
in the cave? Like, how do you know that your new point of view isn't actually the caved one?
I think it's a very, very interesting question,
mm-hmm.
because I mean there is a lot of I think that the world right now is probably I think there are a lot of caves, and I think there are a lot of people who have found their way outside of the caves,
mm-hmm.
and I think that the communication clash amongst these people is certainly probably the primary driver of conflict the world over,
right?
You know, it is this exact thing, and it's, you're not like, I have wondered this topic before,
yeah,
because it's so very hard to argue with the information that you've always been surrounded with,
right?
You know, and like it's kind of like one of these things where it's like, you can go to primary sources and like, you know, kind of like peel back the layers and be like, well, where did this start? Like, you know, like let me become like more, you know, educated on a topic or learn more about a topic or, you know, like whatever the case might be. But there's always like the, I'm going to use an example that I feel like I frequently use, which has to do with the current shape of the earth, which I'm not a flat earther, but, it's kind of one of these things where it's like you can pull back your, if you wanted to be as skeptical as absurdly possible, you could basically say that like NASA is a construct, you know, which I think probably somewhere in the equation is
someone thinks that,
but like, you know, all of us, I think for the most part, tend to have enough trust that these, you know, scientific and explorative, you know, organizations that exist in the world, like we're not really doubting the legitimacy of them being right. But like, there's also the part of me that's like, you know, I guess I've never been to space.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
So
this is exactly the thing. Like, we all know the world is actually round, right? Right. But for the sake of this discussion, imagine the world really is flat, right? And we all like, and
we all
you're
live
talking
in a cave.
And you're talking to some flat earther, and they're like, no, I did it. I got to space, I came back, I swear to you, it is a disc. Like, I have seen it. You cannot, like, guys. I have pictures. I have been there. And you'd be like, you are outside of your mind. There's absolutely nothing. Like, even if it was true that the earth was flat, there is nothing anyone could say to me to convince me otherwise.
Nope,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and they'd be like, no, get like, are you familiar with Plato's cave? I'm like, are you? You know, like this is exactly how that conversation would go.
I know. You know what I mean? I know. Yeah. And it's very, I think it's very, it's very interesting because it's like, any one person only holds so much of the knowledge. On top of that, you know, like we all hold a very tiny percent of all knowledge. But then as far as we are concerned, we own 100% of our own knowledge.
Well, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
And so then that becomes this kind of highly complicated thing. But then in addition to that, I think that there's another layer of understanding that you could even apply to this particular example, which like might speak to the opportunity, luck, success, like whatever the case may be for you, the person who somehow spotted the light, you know? And so it's like, you have had the ability to go out and see the outside world.
Right.
Right. And the rest of these people haven't had that opportunity yet, or the ability to do so, or maybe the want to do so.
Right.
And so it's like, I also am sometimes curious about this because I tend to feel that it ends up being the case that the person who has exited the cave is attempting to explain to the people inside of the cave, possibly in a condescending manner,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I also feel like you have to, it's maybe like a tiny, like privilege check that you have somehow had that opportunity
right.
to see it.
Sure.
And because you've had the opportunity to see it, like, would you have believed it before you saw it?
Right.
You know, like you have had an experience that has allowed you to change.
Right.
Have they?
Right. Okay. But so now this is another interesting thought though, is that like, so like we're taking, let's like switch it up a little bit. Supposing outside the cave is not the actual earth. Suppose you walk outside the cave and it's frickin' lava land out there.
Lava land.
You know, yeah. it is different from inside the cave.
Sure.
There are different opportunities. And it turns out there's more to life than the cave. And maybe it's even worth exploring. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's lava and it ain't good. Right? You come back and you're like, guys, but it's still different to you, right?
Right?
It's still new. It's still crazy. It's still the most amazing thing you've ever seen.
Right.
You're still going to go back and have the same exact conversation. Like, I have been outside. You cannot believe it. We need to go out. And it'd be like, in this situation, you'd probably be pretty wrong.
That's,
right?
The floor is lava.
The floor is lava.
That's true. That's true.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just feel like this was such an interesting thought experiment to me, and it just seems like it would continue in circles. It's like, and see, like the idea was like, just tell other people about the experiment, and then maybe that'll help them reconsider their point of view. But maybe this is just me. I feel like all it would do is make them immediately flip it on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that feels like most likely what's going to happen. Like, there is enough for anybody who has a disagreement about anything. It's because both people feel they have enough supporting evidence to have come to the conclusion that they have come to.
Right.
You know, and realistically it's going to probably require that like willingness to then go with the person to see if you can actually exit the cave.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like you might have to hold their hand. And they might have to be open-minded enough for you to do so. And it's like, how do we do that?
Right.
Like, how do all of us do that?
How do you get outside the cave?
How do we get outside the cave?
Get outside of your own cave.
And it's are you difficult. The person who needs to hold the hand, or are you the person who needs to extend it?
Right. Yeah. Did you just find a different section of the cave?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh,
who knows? All so, right.
Anyway, well, plenty to think about.
Plenty to think about. All right. Transition. Ben, can I bring up with you an amazing thing that was shared with us on the Reddit?
Please do.
So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about space wine. perhaps you remember.
I do remember. Yeah. Like powdered wine.
Powdered wine. Well, the good little kernels over on Reddit did some digging, and it turns out that basically powdered wine is a thing, not so much anymore because alcohol is just legal, so you don't really need to buy powdered wine because you could just have wine.
Yep.
But alas, at one point, prohibition was a thing.
Right.
And prohibition, you know what? Part of me thinks we should bring back prohibition for like 5 years just to let people's creative juices go wild, because the ways people got around prohibition are fascinating to me.
Dude.
Like, it was the least effective thing ever because people got so creative.
Restrictions breed creativity.
Absolutely.
In the most remarkable way. Yes. I will tell you my very brief anecdote about that is that when I went to high school, I was the first group of students who was given a laptop. And yeah. I think the idea was that they were attempting to like give us the opportunity to learn more about computers and like become more savvy. Because
right. This is the way of the future. You're going to go to college. You're going to take all your notes on a laptop there.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada.
And realistically, it was like the teachers, because they hadn't grown up with laptops, they didn't really have a whole lot of knowledge about how to help us use the laptops.
Right. They didn't know how to like teach students who had laptops.
Right. But what they did do was put restrictions on the ability to do a lot of stuff on the computer, which we then undid.
Right.
You know?
Nonstop.
Nonstop. And so, I mean, it was exactly prohibition. It was like, no, you can't do that. And it's like, well, we're going to do it anyway.
Well.
And it's like, in the process, I learned a lot about computers. So joke's on you. I did exactly what you wanted me to do.
Except my homework.
Except for my homework. Yeah. And take notes on Romeo and Juliet.
Okay. So... Here is the history of powdered wine. During Prohibition, grape farmers would make semi-solid grape concentrate called wine bricks,
okay.
which were then sold with a warning label on them. And the warning label read, after dissolving the brick in a gallon of water, do not place the liquid in a jug away in the cupboard for 20 days, because if you do, it'll turn into wine.
That is amazing.
It is like so amazing. Like, definitely don't do this, wink.
Oh my goodness.
This is just a brick of grapes.
It's like you're teaching people how to make wine. It's like, no, we're teaching them not to make wine.
We are specifically telling them not to do exactly how not to handle this product, okay? We know how very illegal putting this in water and then putting it in a jug for 20 days would be, and we really want to make sure people don't accidentally do that. So all the instructions for what not to do are right here.
We are crystal clear.
Unlike your grape brick will be after 20 days in the cupboard.
Once properly fermented and served with soft cheeses.
Oh my gosh. I was dying. It's like the powdered wine has been a thing before. During Prohibition.
So maybe instead of calling it space wine, we'll just call it brick wine.
Call it brick wine?
Brick wine.
Yeah.
I'm like, would you like to order a brick of wine, please?
I have a brick of wine. It'll be here in 3 weeks.
It's like Legos, right? But wine.
But wine.
It's like, you know that toy you wouldn't buy? What if I sold it to you disassembled?
Mm-hmm.
And the entire objective was to assemble it.
Right. This is exactly Lego's scam, right? They're like, it's as if they have like done Prohibition on toys.
And yes.
Lego's like, no, definitely these aren't toys. These are just, you know, a highly sophisticated interlocking brick system. Definitely don't assemble them in this way, because if you do, you'd end up with a race car.
It's true. Also, I think we accidentally refer to them as Legos instead of Lego, as is the proper plural.
Well,
we have been told once upon a time.
Mobby.
Correction. Y'all. Correction found.
Wow. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, anyway, it's okay. I want to
know if you can get wine bricks today anywhere.
If we can, we should.
We should.
And try it. We should accidentally not make our own wine. I love the sound of this.
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you something that also falls similarly into this category, because I have recently purchased a three-dimensional printer.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Look at it, everybody.
I'm about to make some stuff. The
3D printers fall into like the same category as like CrossFit, where it's like, once you have one, you can't not talk about it. And if you were the third party to someone who meets someone else who owns a 3D printer, just like read a book or something. Because like, you have nothing to contribute to this conversation anymore.
Oh, man. He's getting fired. Oh, man. They asked about the filament.
Filament. Polycarbonate. What is it? Plastic.
Words and stuff.
Words. Sandpaper. Anyway, you got a 3D printer.
I got a 3D printer. So the thing about the 3D printer, though, is that there's actually a rather hilarious sound on TikTok right now, which is basically like people all over the planet getting 3D printers so they can make stuff they wouldn't buy at the dollar store.
Yeah, basically.
I was like, oh no.
Uh-oh.
It's so true.
Uh-oh. What have you made?
Well, I have made nothing yet.
Oh, you made nothing
yet. I have made nothing yet. I attempted to assemble my 3D printer last week, and then I got food poisoning.
Oh,
and
whoops. So you haven't even made the printer yet.
I haven't even made the printer yet. Okay. Some assembly is required, left to be done. However, I did think that this was a particularly funny thing because there is nothing in the world that is more fascinating to me than 3D printing. And like, there are people who are currently 3D printing houses, you know, and it's like, that is so cool. Like I would, it's like, if I were going to like really just like go and like purchase some obscene, like expensive piece of equipment, it might be the like crane device that is a 3D printer that can print a house.
It'd be pretty cool.
It would be so cool.
Yeah.
I would just go and print houses everywhere. I'd be like, you need a house? No problem. I'll come and do it.
I
actually can't do it at all, but my machine can.
I can't do it.
But, you know, I feel like it would be so fun. And so it's like, I've always wanted a 3D printer so that I can like try to do things. And it's almost like I got it. And I'm like, it's like I'm almost like afraid to set it up because I'm like currently living inside of the anticipation of the magic and like, that's it. You know, it's like the magic I'm feeling right now. It's almost like being excited for vacation.
Right.
You know, it's like being excited about your vacation is as much fun as the vacation is.
Right.
You have something to look forward to. And right now it's like, well, like what if I start to like make stuff and then I'm like, no longer enthused.
Yeah, what if you'd like lose the enthusiasm for it?
I think I have too many fears.
You have too many fears?
Too much anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
There's always something I'm concerned about.
All you gotta do is just keep printing, man.
Just keep printing. Maybe it's like 75 hard, but like every day I print 245.
Right. You need like 75 plastic.
75 plastic.
You know, like I'm gonna print one thing a day every day for 75 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And read nonfiction books.
I'm definitely going to continue to do that.
Yeah.
Did you know how much learning there is available to do out there?
By books?
Books. Who knew?
Books. I love. So I've been sort of reading vaguely Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events to Luke, which every now and then, not in any particular order at all, mind you. He has all 13 books up in his room, and every now and then when I say, like, all right, it's time for bed, you know, we're getting ready for bed, go pick a book, and he'll just go pick one and bring it to me and be like, this one. I'll be like, okay, we should probably finish the first one. He's like, I want this one. I'm like, okay. But what is amazing to me is that it's like, I mean, it's a book about like words and wordplay and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like it's like a book about reading, which is kind of interesting. But it is funny to me how many different scenarios that Violet and Klaus and Sonny Baudelaire can find themselves in, wherein the solution is the nearby library or collection of books that every adventure seems to include somehow.
Oh, I don't know how to solve this.
Right.
A book.
Well, that is always what it is, right? Because Violet is an inventor and Klaus is good at reading and Sonny bites things. So inevitably, at some point in every single story, Violet will invent something and Klaus will read something useful and Sonny will bite something.
Okay.
Useful.
Something useful.
Something useful.
Okay.
In a useful way. She also eventually takes up cooking.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a very proficient one-year-old, you know.
Very exciting.
Indeed.
Very exciting.
Anyway.
It's very interesting to me because I feel like there are subjects of like information where I just feel like I've never known enough about them. And so as I've been going through and like listening to book after book after book, I have been enjoying the heck out of it. But additionally, I'm like, man, I could read about other stuff too.
Yeah.
I could read about like, say, Abe Lincoln.
I was just going to say, you could read about Abe Lincoln.
If I so desired, sure. But now, okay, so back to our cave analogy.
Oh, boy.
My big concern now is, like, how do you know if the book that you're reading is, like, the most historically accurate version of the book so that you're not then also entering a new cave of misinformation?
That's tricky. I mean, I guess you could just read many things. Many books about Abe Lincoln and just sort of make sure you have like the truest, you know, if it's in like all of the books, it's probably true. If there's conflicting information, harder.
Right. I know. And that's the thing too, is that like when you start discussing things like this, it's like certainly there are really good pieces of information that help clarify what truly happened.
Yeah.
But similar to our space problem, it's like, did you know Lincoln?
Yeah.
Right. Did you hang out? Did you grapple with him?
Did you throw down with World Wrestling Hall of Famer Abe Lincoln?
Still the number one fun fact that we've stumbled across.
Number one fun fact about Abe Lincoln, sure.
I just can't believe it. Anyway, reading, fun, apparently. Who knew?
Okay, here's my new, just to tie it up, here's my new wondering about Abe Lincoln was, do you think he owned wine bricks or it feels to me like he might have owned some sort of vineyard, you know?
Oh, it does feel that
way. You think there's
way.
Like Lincoln wine out there?
Gotta be Lincoln wine.
There's no way it's true that he was involved in air pirate ships and the Civil War pirates and was a world champion grappler, but didn't own a winery.
If there's one thing that I know about Lincoln, it's that no matter how lucrative of an idea we bring up about him, somehow it's more true than we expect it to be.
Maybe he didn't outright own it, but I guarantee you there is a grain of truth.
There is a grape of truth.
A grape of truth.
Nice.
About Lincoln's winery. Lincoln's vineyard.
Okay, maybe
that's
this
the
is
word.
Instead
if I'm
of
winery.
Maybe instead of fun facts about Coyote, we have a segment that's just, maybe this is true about Lincoln, and maybe it's not.
Right, and we just take a guess, and then you guys tell us whether or not it was true, or how true it was. Because almost certainly it was true somehow.
Almost
certainly.
Do you think it's possible that this is true about more people than you might think?
No, I think Lincoln was singular, Ben.
Well, I mean, Jay, listen, there's no doubt. Remarkable.
There's no doubt.
Remarkable human being. However, it's almost like if you're ever searching for an email, have you ever had this be the case where you're like, you're trying to figure out like I know I ordered a green t-shirt, you know, and so you type in green t-shirt and then like 87 different emails pop up and it's like be green this week, donate your t-shirt to Goodwill, you know, or something like that. And it's like, well, that's not the green t-shirt, the result that I wanted.
Right.
But like, it turns out it does have the words green and t-shirt in there, and I now see why this result came up, and I still can't find my Old Navy receipt for my green t-shirt.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
You're tracking? Smelling?
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. So I'd be curious if like almost in the same way that it's almost like anything can be applicable about a human being if you try hard enough. It's like if you were to search Lincoln's emails of his life, winery comes up.
Right.
You know, vineyard.
Vineyard.
It's like he's been there. He's interacted with one. He owned one. His brother-in-law owned one. Something happened near a vineyard.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there was an important thing.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, you know, if you Google Lincoln and vineyard, it's like there's a story in the same way that there's a story if you Google Lincoln and wrestling.
This is exactly why you need to not be afraid to bring up whatever weird or unique or like side hustle thing you're working on almost no matter what, because chances are someone else has a story about it, even if they're not directly involved with it in exactly the way that you are.
Yes.
Yeah. So my example would be that, like, since, you know, we've gotten into the Pokemon trading card game, you know, as I said, I've been trying to be more intentional about like bringing it up in conversations and stuff. And it was surprising to me, especially at the beginning, like one, I just have friends who are just outright interested in playing or who were already like secretly collecting cards. And it was like, well, this is unbelievable. Like, I was just astounded because I felt like this was such like a niche, narrow thing that I might have been interested in. But in the meantime, anyone who I've talked to who's, not interested in collecting or playing or has any involvement with it now, certainly still had some involvement with it at some point in their life that they are happy to reminisce about.
Right. Yes. Because I think that so much of the, I think a lot of examples of things that you might be interested in as an adult, if you're at all self-conscious or worried or something, somebody might judge you for that interest. What's really happening is that high school never let go because I don't know as an adult that there is anything anyone has ever told me that they were interested in as a hobby that I haven't found interesting.
That is a fantastic sentence.
Right?
Right. Yes, you're right. You're right. I've never had someone tell me they were interested in something and also been like, okay, nerd.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Right. It's just not the case anymore. This is not, because you wouldn't be classified as that. If this person's not gonna be like, oh yeah, this is like the Pokemon guy.
Right. Yeah.
It's just sort of it's just something that you're into, and then it gives them something to ask you about.
Yeah.
So maybe more people just need to adopt your current practice of going out into the world and really making it an effort to inject this.
Indeed.
Is take something that you're like, I don't want to let people know that I'm into this nerdy thing, because it's even our YouTube channel, Super Carlin Brothers, for example, it's if anything, there's a massive indication out there that tons of people
are
also
into the
thing. This stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's absolutely not something, to be remotely ashamed of.
Yeah.
Cause I guarantee people are just going to think it's awesome. Man. And you're awesome.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Ben, I have one more thing to talk about that I feel like sort of wraps up many pop ideas into one.
Okay.
Ready? Okay, so we've talked on the pop before about Wordle.
Okay.
We've talked about manifesting things.
Yep.
We've talked about today alone, wine. And of course, and we've talked about manifesting. We've been manifesting Abe Lincoln history. Maybe. Who's to say?
Maybe they're just rewriting the history books as we go.
Yep. All right. That happened too. You know what? This is now part of history. Anyway, so this sort of wraps up all of those ideas into one. It is possible, Ben, that you and I manifested Wordle. I know.
Tell me more.
Okay. So on the Reddit, back on episode 31 of Popcorn Culture, we were discussing what we thought, we were trying to, in our brains, think of what the worst cocktail imaginable would be. Do you remember what we came up with?
The worst?
What is the worst possible combination of an alcoholic beverage with another liquid?
You know what's hilarious is that this is a conversation that would have taken place only 2 years ago, and I look back on that version of us and be like, children. Who were they? Thought they knew what they were talking about starting a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, let's think here. Okay.
Yeah. What do you got off the top of your head right now?
Milk and vodka.
Milk and vodka is extremely close to the answer that we came up with, which was actually milk and wine.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. We talked about it 1 week, and then the next week we came back and we decided that it turns out that you really can't even mix wine and milk because it will cause the milk to curdle.
Oh my gosh.
So the name we came up with for the worst cocktail of wine and milk that curdles is Wordle.
No, we did not.
Yes, we did.
We said the word Wordle. Literally, yeah. While we were sitting here talking about this, I was like, all right, well, it's like wine and milk. It'd be funny to call it girdle. Because it would, grapes, like a grape curdle.
Right, a grape curdle. Right. This is just like wine curdle, Wordle.
You know, curdle
so
is the
most...
So
we spelled it W-U-R-D-L-E, I suppose.
That
but
is
you
disgusting.
Know what? It's the right... It's the, just the spelling alone makes me want a sponge.
Yeah, I know. And you know what's interesting is that typically the word curdle would make me want a sponge, but it's almost like, I think if you add a fruit in front of it, like a grape curdle, it's like, hey, we're come on over for brunch on Sunday. We're having grape curdles.
Oh, right. Yeah, like cheese curds.
We're having a strawberry curdle.
Yeah.
You know, it almost sounds so close to like a crumble.
Oh,
or
you're right.
Like that.
Yeah,
you know,
strawberry like, curdle. Right, yeah. This is what a wine brick is, isn't it?
Yeah.
A grape curdle is just a wine brick.
Ugh. A gelatinous cube.
A gelatinous cube.
Just about.
It can't be.
Just about and almost.
Oh man.
Oh man. I'm very excited about this piece of information.
There you go.
I'm gonna go home and tell everybody who will listen to me that we basically manifested Wordle.
Right. We invented the word Wordle, not, you know, James Wardle or whatever, whoever came up with the game.
Yeah, definitely not Wardle who came up with Wordle.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It was definitely Bennett J who came up with wine and milk, aka Wordle.
I am sort of impressed how close I was able to get to the same answer.
It was, you seem very against cream-based alcohol consumption.
Yeah, but which is funny because like I wouldn't necessarily specifically have an issue with like an Irish cream.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? What you would even call it?
I think milk and vodka must be an actual drink.
Like Bailey's, you know? Like
yeah.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, it's probably not the first thing I would reach for, but I wouldn't be like disgusted by it.
Right.
By a long shot. I mean, I think it would taste... I would put it in coffee.
Is milk and vodka just a white Russian?
Oh, it is!
Oh, so it's not only an existing cocktail, but I suppose a somewhat popular one in some regard.
Because I bet most people know... Like they've heard White Russian before.
You've heard of it.
Yeah.
It has a name.
It has
you could
a name.
Go to the bar and be like, I'd like a White Russian. And they'd be like, okay.
They'd probably be like, really? You sure? Like, do we have any milk? This is a bar. Of course we don't have milk.
But there are other like milk-based cocktails. Like Kahlua. That's like a cream-based one.
I would put Kahlua right in the same category as Bailey's, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think those are different.
I made the mistake of comparing Truly's and White Claw's in our office the other day, and Ethan, the editor, told me that I was just dead wrong.
They were fundamentally different products.
Yeah, they just completely.
Completely, Ben. Okay? You couldn't have been more off base at all. I'm sure Ethan is putting something on screen right now. Anyway.
I was floored. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. If you have any feedback for us, you can send that over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Also, don't forget that we are currently running a promotion over on our... Well, not even currently. I'm about to tell you about a new promotion to go inside with our new goal that we have over on Patreon.
Okay.
So the goal, to remind you, as we said at the beginning of the episode, over on the Patreon page, is basically just to continue to have an ad-free experience here over on The Pop, which would not start no matter which way, no matter what happens until 2023. And then, you know, it would be subject to whatever's going on at that point in time. But if you would like to help us towards the new goals that we have, we are offering a fun, cool new promotion at the $10 tier on our Patreon, where you can get a very special piece of new merch, which I am now going to show to you. Check it out, Jay.
Ba-bam.
It is the official Popcorn Culture mini flag.
The one true mini flag of Popcorn Culture.
So you guys may remember, if you've been a long time Pop listener, that we had a flag design contest some time ago now, and we have been in the process of ordering and collecting lots of our little mini flags. And so if you sign up at the $10 tier at the present, not only will you be helping us towards our goal of an ad-free 2023, but you will also receive a tiny little Popcorn Culture flag. Although I stuck it in an apple because I thought that it was fun and festive and cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, it occurs to me that if I wanted to leave it in the apple forever, that we would need an apple that wasn't going to go bad.
Right.
And so now I'm a little bit bummed about that because I really like the fact that the flag sticks out of an apple. It feels like how it's supposed to be situated. Anyway, if you would like to get your own little tiny Popcorn Culture flag, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time. pop, pop.